Morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Good. Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. Beloved Jesus Christ. Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. We have a very full heart today as we meet together. As we look out the window and see the beautiful sunshine and all the leaves, so beautiful this fall time of year. The thought struck me the other day that it's interesting that rather than summer fading into winter in kind of a gray, dull kind of a way, that it really goes out in a spectacular floral display of changing leaves and colors. And that's perhaps suitable in thinking about Pujya Swamiji Satchidanandaji in his passing. And when a great saint, when a great spiritual master passes from the body, Mother said that there's a spiritual ambience that goes out all over the earth coming from that one as they leave the body. And the entire earth, and particularly those hearts and minds who are attuned spiritually, are the recipients of that spiritual grace and light as it goes out. Reading from an email that we received from the ashram, 16th day ceremonies connected with Pujya Swamiji's Mahasamadhi. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. By the abundant grace of beloved Papa, Pujya Mataji, and Pujya Swamiji, the 16th day ceremony following the Mahasamadhi of Pujya Swamiji Satchidanandaji Maharaj was performed on October 27, 2008. Devotees had virtually started pouring into the ashram 2 to 3 days prior to the puja, and the entire ashram was getting charged with the spiritual fervor. A possible damper to the entire program was the heavy downpour of rains of South India. According to the weather forecast, storms and thunderstorms were predicted from October 25th to 29th. Several devotees were fervently praying to the Almighty Lord of the Universe so that there may be no rains at least on October 27th. What cannot be possible with faith? Beloved Papa chose to alter his entire rain plans, with the results that the rain ceased on the 26th and the sun has been shining bright ever since. Devotees might recall that it rained heavily on the night of the funeral of Pujya Swamiji. However, most might not have been aware of exactly what happened. The funeral pyre was lit about 5:45 p.m. By 8:30 p.m., there were only 3 to 4 devotees near the samadhi site as the intense flames almost died. A few logs were still burning when a gradual downpour started. Almost from nowhere, about 8 to 9 devotees reached the site and held up plastic sheets over the fire to prevent it from being put out. Soon, the temporary shed, which had been assembled and kept ready, was put up by devotees and workers. By then, there were only a few low flames, but heavy rains. At about 5 a.m. on the morning of the 27th, the holy ashes of Pujya Swamiji were placed together with written Ram Nam books in the shrine beside the holy ashes of Papa and Mataji amidst chanting of Ram Nam. The main program started at 9 a.m. with prayer, Ramnam chanting, and bhajans by over 100 young children from nearby schools. This was followed by a welcome speech by Swami Muktanandaji, Swami Padma Banandaji of Divine Life Society, Rishikesh, presiding over the function. Swami Sakranandaji Maharaj of Sri Ramakrishna Mission, Swami Vivekanandaji Maharaj of Chinmaya Mission, Swami Amrit Kripananda of Puri Maharaj of Mata Amrita Anandamaya Mission, Sadhu Rangarajan of Yogi Ramak Surakumar Ashram, Swami Pragnananda Tirtha Maharaj of Vazur Ashram recalled several touching incidents with their lives with Swami Satchidanandaji Maharaj. Swami Muktanandaji recalled the following incident in Vinoba Bhaveje's Mahatma Gandhi's spiritual disciple, reproduced here in Vinobaji's own words, quote, "When I heard of Babu, or Gandhiji's, death, my immediate reaction was, now he has become immortal. Time has only strengthened that conviction. When Babu was in the body, it took time to go and meet him. Now, it takes no time at all. All I need do is close my eyes and I am with him. When he was alive, I buried myself in his work and went to talk to him only now and then. Now, I talk with him all the time and feel his presence near me." The sages speak to us of the immense range of the soul, the self. We reverently accept their teaching. So long as a great soul lives in the body, his power is limited. But when he is released from the body, his power knows no bounds. Swami Muktanandaji mentioned that similarly, one and all had the feeling Pujya Swamiji's presence closer than before, though each one definitely misses his physical presence, his warm smile, his loving gestures, his words of comfort. Swami Chaitanyanandaji of Vale Malai Ashram in Tamil Nadu said, "All of us like to eat different things, idlis, dosas, etc., i.e., we all have different tastes. Similarly, many people, institutions, focus on specific gurus and gods. Ananda Ashram, however, is unique. Here every saint, every guru, every name of God is treated equally with reverence, adoration, and respect, without any differentiation." Many recall the loving words of Pujya Swamiji himself, which he has addressed through his last letter to the devotees. Quote, "Feel that we do not belong to any particular sect. We are all devotees of the Lord, awakened and guided by our guru, beloved Papa. Some other devotees may be getting guidance from some other saints. Thus, whoever may be our guru, we are all children of God and devotees of God. And therefore, brothers and sisters, guru and God are not different. The same God whom we want to realize has come to us in the form of beloved Papa to guide us. So also God has come in different forms, other saints, to awaken and guide a certain other section of society." It seemed that Pujya Swamiji was once again reminding us of our goal through Swami Chaitanyanandaji. In his own inimitable way, Swami Padma Banandaji, a personification of childlike innocence and simplicity, guided the entire program in a most informal way, and yet delivered a profound message of the great legacy left behind for us all by Papa, Mataji, and Swamiji. He pointed out the words of Swami Chidanandaji Maharaj, quote, "Looking at you, the world should understand the divinity of your guru." This is perhaps seemed to be the most appropriate takeaway message for all devotees of Ananda Ashram and indeed all sadhakas. Looking at you, the world should understand the divinity of your guru. The thrust of the entire program was on the divine attributes of Pujya Swamiji, which all devotees were blessed to witness, feel, and indeed receive in bounty. Needless to say, everyone was gently reminded that it was not enough to simply glorify Pujya Swamiji, which in fact he was absolutely never in favor of, but instead to try to emulate his noble attributes and thus follow his footsteps. Apart from the Yati Puja, in which over 80 Mahatmas were honored with Pada Puja, food and prasad, there were over 300 sadhus from different parts of the country who too were provided with food and prasad. Over 8,000 devotees who had come from many places were also fed on the occasion. Each aspect of the entire ceremony went off so smoothly and beautifully that each one was surcharged with divinity. Despite such a huge gathering, there was not a single commotion, and there was peace, and there was joy above all. Following the typical Anandasram tradition, there were no formalities, no rituals, no strictures, no one to give or receive orders. It seemed that the event, if it at all can be called that, had been painstakingly planned for several days, when in reality each one simply did his or her best, singly or in unison, as the situation demanded. What could be a greater tribute to Pujya Swamiji, an embodiment of love, peace, silence, joy, fortitude, humility, and calmness? Surely, Pujya Swamiji, who must have witnessed this ceremony as the all-pervading spirit, would have showered his choicest blessings on one and all. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Yesterday we marked the day of All Saints Day. And I looked up in the dictionary how they were to define saints. This comes from the encyclopedia. A saint, from Latin, sanctus. Sanctus is a human being to whom has been attributed and who has generally demonstrated a high level of holiness and sanctity in an exemplary life of virtuous behavior. A saint is therefore not simply a believer, but one who has been transformed by virtue and presents an example, often providing guidance to other human beings, striving to conform their lives to God. Such a person is often, but not always, recognized after their death by other human beings as someone who lived a divine life and who is in the divine presence even in death. Saints are sometimes formally honored by fellow believers after their death by being given the title of saint before their name. Such examples are the apostles, martyrs, and doctors of the church. Saints are not exclusive to Christianity. In most religious cultures, there are people who have been recognized as having fulfilled the highest aspirations of a religious teachings and have realized God's will in their actions. In the mystical traditions of the world's religions, one who has reached the uppermost level of purity and wisdom are often referred to as a saint. By and large, for a dictionary, I thought that was a reasonable description. Reading from Master's Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. This comes from Chapter 7, beginning with verse 13. This world of mortal beings does not perceive me, unchangeable and beyond all qualities, because they are deluded by the triple nature modes of nature. It is difficult indeed to go beyond the influence of my divine cosmic hypnosis, imbued with the triple qualities. Only those who take shelter in me become free from this power of illusion. The lowest of men, perpetrators of evil and misguided fools, whose discrimination has been stolen by Maya, or delusion, follow the path of demonic beings, failing to take shelter in me. The afflicted, the questers for wisdom, the cravers for power here and hereafter, and the wise, these, O Arjuna, are four kinds of righteous men who pursue me. Chief among them is the sage, ever constant and one-pointed in devotion. For I am exceedingly dear to the sage, and he is exceedingly dear to me. All these four kinds are noble, but the sage I consider indeed as my own self. Unwavering is he settled in me alone as his utmost goal. After many incarnations, the sage attains me, realizing the Lord is all-pervading. So a man so illumined is hard to find. Led by their own inclinations, their discrimination stolen by this or that craving, pursuing this or that cultic injunction, men seek lesser gods. Whatever embodiment, a god incarnate, a saint, or a deity, a devotee strives faithfully to worship, it is I who make his devotion unflinching. Absorbed in that devotion, intent on the worship of that embodiment, the devotee thus gains the fruits of his longings, yet those fulfillments are verily granted by me. It is to be understood here that in speaking as such, Krishna is identifying himself with the formless, the beginningless, endless, all-pervading spirit, that which we identify with the name of God. There are many people, of course, who will understand this to mean a personhood of an individual, that having attained that fully illumined consciousness, but this is once again the material mind in seeking out to have a material representation for that which is ultimately beyond all duality. Master's commentary here, a true devotee expressing devotion to God through any lesser or higher mode of worship will find response to his desire from the Supreme Being. He who worships representative forms of the Godhead, because for him the Absolute is unfathomable, will receive the grace of God that blesses his devotional endeavor. Therefore, even the worshipper of lesser gods, personifications of supreme deity, does not go divinely unrecognized or unrewarded. If a person of deep devotion offers homage to the form of any deity symbolically representing God, he silently responds by materializing that form in visions before the devotee. God is secreted in that manifestation, although the form itself reveals only a modicum of spirit. In India, cosmic nature and the infinite, in one common depiction, are symbolized in the form of Kali, the mother of the universe, standing on the breast of her husband, Shiva, or God. This symbolism, unraveled, signifies the cosmic nature does not test or tempt the devotee with delusion if he is consciously united with the infinite, the breast of Shiva. Many pious Hindus worship God and his immanence in the cosmos in the form of Shiva and Kali. No matter what mode of worship the devotee adopts to find, the Lord accepts it if the devotion be genuine. This divine acceptance enables the mind of the devotee to concentrate on the spirit beyond the specific symbol. When a great devotee worships a symbolic deity as God, he manifests his unseen omnipresence by a visible display of that symbolic form. He appears before, talks with, and blesses the earnest devotee through the form that is his beloved by him. The symbolic form of God appearing to a Hindu devotee as Kali, Durga, Vishnu, Shiva, or Krishna, for example, has become a permanent blueprint in the ether. If any other devotee concentrates very deeply on that deity, which has actually been seen and worshipped by a great saint, that same manifestation appears in the living form to satisfy the devotee's true heart call. Similarly, any devotee fervently worshipping God in the form of Jesus Christ, the Holy Mother, Saint Francis, Babaji, Lahiri Mahasya, or any saint or true guru, either mentally or before an image or a picture, may see that form first in vision, and then by deeper spiritual advancement as a materialized being living and talking. Any devotee who ardently meditates on the picture or form of a true guru or any other master becomes attuned to him, imbibing his qualities, and ultimately feels that, in that saint, the presence of God. As people can talk back and forth over the radio by tuning in, so a devotee may tune in with a saint and may see him televised in the crystal sphere of the spiritual eye. That is what is implied in the stanza of the Bhagavad Gita. Elsewhere it says, "In whatever way people are devoted to me, in that measure, according to their desire, understanding, and mode of worship, I manifest myself to them." After all, the omnipresent God knows all his true devotees, no matter in what form they love him. Christ said, "Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father?" If God's omniscience is aware of a small sparrow, how much more deeply is he cognizant of his true lovers? Omniscient alone, who knows the hearts of his children, answers their prayers in many ways. Devotion shown to God always evokes in some form a plain or mysterious response. No true devotee is ignored by God. However, shallow seekers who worship astral deities for the fulfillment of desires, who do not realize that it is God who will fulfill their wishes through the instrumentality of divine beings. The Lord is consciously present in all higher beings and in their devotees. It is He who is Chintamani, the jewel that grants all desires. I think Master here beautifully lays out what is for many a mystery. We have all encountered people who have spoken to us of a particular kind of faith, either in Jesus Christ or through a particular religion or a particular deity. And it can seem to those followers, because they have had a particularly uplifting experience, and perhaps through the teachings that they have received, they see that one as the one and only. And therefore, they find it incumbent upon themselves to encourage everyone to find God through that form through which they found God. But here Master lays out that it is the heart's desire of the individual devotee that calls upon God in a particular form. Now, why use a form? It is because it is difficult in the beginning for us to conceive of God as omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, really, because the mind is conditioned into the dual nature of all creation, or prakriti, Mother Nature. And as a result of this, we look for some kind of symbolic representation of that which has no symbol at all at its core. This is so the mind can relate to it, so that we can feel something close to draw to. There are those who describe themselves as not having a devotional nature at all, but they will focus their minds upon some astral form or deity. And because they feel a kinship or a draw towards that one, they will focus upon that one. Sometimes they will say, "That one has become my guru," and so on. The difficulty with this is the realm of imagination within human beings. It may be convenient for us to imagine, granted through a very strong visualization, but nevertheless imagination, that we are in contact with true spiritual forces, through astral beings or through higher beings within this sphere, and feel that we are getting direct communication of the highest sort. But there is no test in this to verify what we are getting, because we are left to our own wits as to what we choose to believe or not to believe, to what we choose to receive or not to receive. And therefore, we are limited by our own mind. The value of a living guru is that we can get that kind of guidance from one who cannot just be easily ignored. That living presence that has their consciousness attuned with divine consciousness is alone able to guide us and to get us through those delusive qualities of the mind. It is very easy in thinking about God and guidance from God to delude ourselves. Is this coming from God? Or is it coming from our own desire nature? I had a deep question about this at one juncture in my life, and so, after consulting different ones, I wrote to Swami Satchidananda, that one that I felt had the greatest degree of realization that I knew of, and I asked him for confirmation. And he wrote back giving the confirmation, even though he said he himself was surprised at what was being given. But he surrendered to that which he identified as truth. And when we are able to subject our little selves to something greater, other than our imagination, then we sometimes have our little comfortable delusions destroyed. And that's not an easy thing. And that's why we avoid it. I would seek out God, says one kind of devotee, but what if he tells me to do something I don't want to do? Or he leads me in some way that I don't want to go? And so we hold back. We're afraid, you see. It's fear that's dictating to us in combination with our own desire nature. I want what I want. And don't bother trying to disturb those little delusions of mine because I like them. And I'm comfortable, even if I complain about them, I'm still comfortable enough with them to keep them. And so it's only when we can really surrender ourselves, you see, really let go of our notions of what we think, what I think individually, is right or wrong for me. Because I will try to protect my little ego self. I will try to keep it from being disturbed too much. Through my own path and following God's direction and will, He took away practically everything I identified with. He took away my job, He took away my home, He took away my marriage, He took away my children at the time. He took away everything. There was not one thing that I wished to have taken away, but He took it all away. And with each step of it, there felt to be me to be a great loss in there. And yet, as He stripped away each one of these things, an interior wisdom and plan began to reveal itself. And I saw how He was taking all of this away. At one point, I went through what is called the nothingness of God. And in that point, I felt nothing, absolutely nothing inside. It was an absolute void. It wasn't filled with anything. It was a void. It was just emptiness. And the person who was closest to me in my life at that time said, "I feel like you are dead." And I said back, completely spontaneously, "I am. I am." Now, some people hear about such experiences and they think, "Why would I want to go through such a thing?" But the reason is because we are like a cup that is being emptied out. It's being filled with some kind of sour drink, sometimes sour, sometimes sweet. But we want to find that amrita. We want to find that ambrosia of God all the time within us. So the cup has to be emptied out. It has to be scoured. Not only that, but the cup has to be completely broken into all of its constituent pieces and thrown into the fire. And the fire molds it into a new form, into a new shape. Jesus said, you don't pour new wine into an old wineskin. You use a new wineskin. You get a new body in Christ. Now, what is Christ? Christ is that divine intelligence and light that dwells within you. And for that Christ consciousness, for that divine light, divine power, divine intelligence to really come in and completely take you up, it requires everything of you. Now, this does not mean that you have to go through those kinds of things that I went through in order to attain it. That's to everybody's individual own karma. It determines what exactly you are taken through, but many are taken through some difficult times. And if you find yourself clinging on to the old out of desperation, and yet you don't really have it, it's been taken away from you, then you're stuck in between. You're not progressing forward, and you're not able to go back into your old life either. And this is a terrible place to be stuck. And some people stay stuck in places like this for a very long time. I know one individual who is making progress and going into their complete realization of God. But at some point they pulled back. They didn't surrender to God and Guru. And they felt themselves being attracted to the lower stages of the astral worlds and of the causal worlds. And then eventually they got themselves into very great trouble because they were so focused on these astral forces and they were being buffeted around by the good and evil and eventually very much by the evil. And it wasn't until they completely broke down in a sense and called out to their guru that they were lifted out of that experience and that they started to make progress again. Now, what we learn through the wisdom of all the great saints of this world is how they focused their minds upon God alone. This was the greatest thing that Mother ever gave to us. This saying, keep your mind on God. It encapsulates the whole spiritual truth right there in those few words. Now, we can do that through singing to God, through loving God, through serving God, through using our mind of discrimination in order to determine what is of God and what is not. Really, the mind cannot say what God is. It can really mostly determine what it is not. And so we use that mind like a sword, cutting away that which is not God until finally that which is God, that which is left standing and only left standing, is revealed before us. And this is the beautiful aspect of our path, is that it is a living path. It is real. Each one of us are journeying upon our path. Now, some days feel better than other days, don't they? Some days we feel like that we're really growing, we're learning, we're becoming something more. And other days we feel kind of lackadaisical or we feel a little bit lost. This is because we have not really been applying ourselves, not with our complete heart, mind, and soul. This path that we follow requires everything of us. And if there are those who want to bargain, they will fall short of the goal. There's the beautiful story of the man that Mother told, of the man with the pearl of great price, and the individual went to go bargain with them. And the man wanted $1,000, which was a great deal of money at the time, for this pearl. It was the most valuable pearl in the world. And the man started out by offering half, and then he went up a little bit, and he kept on trying to just inch it up, no more than he had to. And the one who was the owner kept on saying, no, no, no. And he said, only the fullest price will get you this pearl. And it wasn't until the man gave him every penny that he had, all the $1,000, did he receive that pearl of great price. And so it is with our pearl of God realization. Now, Swami Satchidananda was a wonderful, wonderful example to us all. God showed me one time how each saint carries a particular persona that they emulate to this world that shows us something about ourselves and something about the path. Swami Satchidananda was forever the disciple of his gurus, Papa and Mataji, and of God. He was the complete example of surrender. He didn't do what he wanted to do. He wanted to go up next to the Ganges, up in the Himalayas, and meditate upon God alone. He wanted that quietness. He wanted that until he could get established in divine consciousness. But Mataji was of a different mind. Mataji was a karma yogi. You see, when she first went to Papa, she just went. She was an individual who went there, as any other of the devotees. But she saw that there needed to be some things done. So she picked up a broom and she started sweeping. And every time that she went out there, she looked around to see what was to be done. And she just wanted, she didn't ask, she just went about doing it. This is her natural want. And when Papa started directing her on the path, he told her, first of all, to chant Ram Nam constantly. Then he told her, go around to your neighbors and offer them help. Now here she was, a mother of her own children, but she would go out to other households. She would pick up a broom and start sweeping. She would help in the kitchen. She would help in whatever way was needed. And in this way, she began to universalize her vision, you see, because if you're serving God in everyone, you're not just serving one embodiment of God in the form of Papa. You serve everybody that you meet. Now, can you imagine going about your life in this way? Whatever needs to be done, and you see yourself as serving God in whatever way God calls upon you. Now, God may take you in some strange and interesting directions in this way, you see. You may be forming, you may be serving some forms that in your mind you're thinking, I don't think this is God. I don't think this individual maybe even deserves what it is that I'm doing for them, and they certainly don't appreciate it. And yet here I am feeling guided to do something for them. And then at the end, after you've served them, and perhaps there's no acknowledgement, no appreciation for anything that you've done, maybe even finding fault and criticism, how would you feel? Would you have that purity of mind where you feel that you have served God in that form? You see, this is quite a thing. This is karma yogi. This is being a karma yogi. It's without anticipations of results. It's without anticipation of anything at all coming your way for what you have done. This role that God has put me into has really been a wonderful teacher. Well, God and Guru, because Mother did it first. And there are many times when I have spent a lot of time and a lot of effort for an individual, and seemingly very little in the way of anything coming back from that one for what has been done for them and given to them. And at first I felt a little, a little hurt by that. Why isn't there anything that comes back at all from this one? And yet, inevitably, God would give from another hand completely. He would give through something that individual, through some words or through some contribution or something else, and perhaps they weren't connected directly with this work at all. And I learned over time that it was God whom I served in each individual. It was God who gave in whatever way He chose to, through whomever He chose to give. And so you see, when you begin to depersonalize things, you don't personalize things when they come in a negative kind of a way to you, what we would deem negative from a human standpoint. I think one of the most wonderful stories that Papa tells in his quest of God is when he's in one community and they just absolutely love and adore Papa. And he's up on the dais and people are pronouncing to him, they're putting flowers around his neck, they're giving him food and all kinds, all the adoration is coming to him and Ram Nam being chanted, and this goes on for days and days and days. They want to keep Papa there. But he says, no, I must go. I know I must go. Ram is telling me to go. So he leaves. He gets onto the train, probably without a ticket, because he didn't usually travel with one. As he sat in the largely empty cars, and they gathered more and more people at different stops, suddenly a large group of Muslims got into the car. And he curls himself up as tightly as he can. Now he's down on the floor. And people don't even see him as a person any longer. They maybe think he's a piece of luggage or something. They're kicking him to get out of his way. And he's got himself as balled up and small as he can, and people are stepping and kicking on him. And suddenly Papa starts to laugh. And he said, oh, Ram, your play is wonderful. At one point, you're giving total adulation. You're having this form put up onto a dais, and now you have him down on the floor, and people are kicking him and have no use for him whatsoever. What a wonderful play you have. And what a perfect, pure consciousness Papa had. I remember when Mother went through the last years in such great illness. And many people, out of ingratitude or just unconscious about things, left and were no longer supporting her or loving her as they had before. So many letters, so many times Mother was told, "You're my entire life. I love you so much." And yet a test or two come along and off they go. And she said, "I don't miss them, really, but I love them, and I will always love them." And I thought, what a wonderful thing, that in her heart, you see, there was no separation. She oftentimes said, people come and try to test the guru, but really it should be the other way around, because the guru has already met the test. They have already loved God more than anything else. They have risen up into God consciousness. It's really the devotee who must pass the test of the guru. And in so many ways, God tests us. He brings us right to the brink of our own complete realization. But who dives in? Mother told the story of such a great saint, someone that she revered so much. And yet he was asking Mother for his complete God realization. He said he had gone up to the ocean, but he could not find in himself to dive into it. And I think this is not an uncommon story. That to give yourself completely, fully, to love God with all of your heart, with all of your mind, with all of your strength, and with all of your soul, this is not an easy thing. Not an easy thing. And yet, if we were to do it, this promise that the saints have given us, that we become like the saint. We become, as the saint is, the same material and the same light, the same wisdom, the same bliss, the same joy that animates their being, they know will animate ours as well. To really honor All Saints Day is not just to put your mind on a saint, although that's a very great thing to do, as Master said. When you really put your mind on a saint, you imbibe their attributes, their strength, their light, their everythingness. The real thing is to become a saint yourself. Now, there are those, particularly perhaps here in the Western world, but I also found it in the East, they would shy away from the idea of becoming a saint, but it's not as perhaps mysterious or ego-driven consciousness as you might think. It means to realize God. It means to so imbue your mind, your body, your heart with the attributes of God that you feel that that is all that is real to you. And everything else of your old human nature has just simply dropped away. And if you have it at all, it's just simply an outer expression by which you interact with this world. But the real living essence is that saint consciousness. Now, Mother made a distinction. She said there is saint consciousness, and that are those who are striving to live according to the light. And they are completely and totally dedicated toward that light. It's a necessary stage to go through. But there is a stage beyond that. And that is the fully illumined master. And for that one, they go beyond all duality. There is no longer trying to live according to the higher light. They have become that higher light. And as such, they live according completely, not through striving, but through being, that light itself. And therefore, they may not always act like a saint. They may do things at times that apparently goes beyond Dharma, the laws of righteousness. We see that in the life of Krishna, where at different times that he encourages adharmic behavior, or that which goes against the rules of Hoyle, you might say. And as such, he was serving a higher purpose. Now, we cannot play fast and loose with this and just do whatever we want to do and say, well, that's how God's directing me. But when you feel that total attunement with God and that total surrender, and one day Mother was talking to a very great saint, and she said God had quite an ego that day. And finally the saint said, Mother, we must remember to be humble. And she went on to demonstrate for him how true humility is humbling yourself to God's will. And if God chooses to act like an egotist through you that day, then you surrender yourself to that, and you act as God is prompting you to act, you see. And in this way, you become completely free, and you even go beyond saint consciousness. But of course, for most of us, we are striving to live by that highest light. And can you imagine an entire world animated by the idea to live according to their highest light? That the movies, that the commercials, that plays, that politicians, that everyone in this entire world were striving to live according to the highest light of which they know, regardless of the consequences. Can you imagine this world? How it would be transported, how it would be changed, how it would be uplifted, and how as all souls dedicated to themselves to that proposition, that eventually the kinks and the difficulties of this world would find a way to get ironed out. This is the vision that saints have offered us. That we have come from a wonderful, wonderful lineage, and we are like the confluence of two great rivers, in that Master and Papa were both of such tremendous influences in Mother's life. And for many of us, Mother and Swamiji have been such tremendous influences in our lives. These prayags, as are called in the Ganges, where two rivers come together, are considered to be very holy places. Now, the guru is particular to the individual, and no one can replace that guru. No one could ever replace Mother for me. And yet, it is with great love and great reverence and great humility that I bow down to the feet of Swamiji. For God had arranged it for him to play a tremendous role in my own life. And I know, I have no doubt, that Mother would smile in appreciation at this. And yet Mother is my ever-living, ever-loving guru, that one that God sent to take me back to himself. But you know, when you rise up and you feel the tremendous oneness with God, all forms, all individuality, they all melt into one ever-loving, ever-blissful, ever-illuminating light. And so in that sense, God and Guru is one, and all Gurus are one. In fact, all humanity, all creation, everything that we see is all one. And when you come into that light of realization, you find that you have been shadow boxing with so many shadows that you have perceived as reality. But now, in the divine light, you see that there are no shadows, but only light, only love, only God. This is the message of the saints. And if we will heed it, and we will rise up into our own divinity, we will forever bow down in humility and in gladness of heart and thank them for all that they have done for us. If you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
To the light within you.